Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, July 16th, 2016. This is episode 1305. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Adobe Marketing Cloud, introducing audio white papers for marketing. White papers read aloud to keep you up to date with the latest trends and technologies. Listen today by searching Audio White Papers for Marketing on iTunes or visit adobe.com for more information. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and virtual reality headgear and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call us. Just use your Skype. Skype will do it. 888-827-5536. The website, techguylabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. It's great. The polarization in this country is just incredible, isn't it? Just the two sides are just don't talk to one another, and one side thinks the other side's crazy, the other side thinks they're crazy. It's just there's no dialogue anymore. We need to start talking one another, one to the other, as if we're human beings, because those of us who play Pokemon Go really are not as crazy as we look. And I know you hate us. I know you do. I see your looks of derision. I see your just dismay, your dismissal. You think we're crazy, don't you? And you think like we walk off cliffs and we're going to stop traffic. And we've got to come together in this country. Pokemon Go players and those who don't Pokemon. We got to. But no, I can see, you know, and of course, those of us who play Pokemon really haven't been around for the last 10 days. We've been busy. I know you understand. Haven't returned the calls, the text messages. It's not that we don't care. It's just that we're busy. We got things we're doing. We're engaged in quests. We're trying to catch them all. I'm serious now. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, it's of course we're kind of used to the idea of people walking around looking at their phones. That's normal. But there's a different quality, isn't there? And I can only imagine what it's like in the big cities. Last week they had a Pokemon Go pub crawl in San Francisco. 21,000 people signed up. And that was last week. It's gotten worse, hasn't it? And of course, the folks at Niantic who created Pokemon Go and the people at the Pokemon Company seem hell-bent on making it worse. They just keep opening it up to new countries. You got to stop this. It's, you know, they started in the U.S. and Australia and New Zealand. They couldn't keep up with it. Then they went to Germany and yesterday Spain and Italy and Portugal. And no wonder the servers are down. No wonder the servers are down. Now, I will stand up and defend Pokemon Go because, first of all, it's a great game. But second, and we already are seeing this, the folks who make the fitness trackers are saying there is a dramatic nationwide surge in miles walked. People are getting out there. They're playing the game. And you can't go to a park in Petaluma or in, I was up in Santa Rosa, the big city, you know. That's a big city for us. As them city slickers up there, the county seat. Went up to the county seat Friday evening, And it was like gangs, but nice gangs, friendly gangs, gangs that were talking to one another, roving, three or four together, looking, searching. We took over a gym, then they took over a gym. We said, go get that gym. It was cute. So we're walking more, we're talking more, we're getting outside. Now, even if you, I can see the dismay in some people's faces. If you don't play the game, if you think it's dumb, and I understand. You think it's dopey. And then I can see those people, the people who think it's dopey, sitting in the cafes, sitting and looking at all the other people thinking, what is wrong with this world? But no, I want to reach out. I want to reach across the aisle and talk to you people. Because you know what? These are your friends and neighbors you haven't seen in years. They've been in their basement playing video games. Look at their skin, the pallor of their skin. It looks like they haven't been outside in years. They haven't. And now they're starting, some of them are sunburned. I'm one of them because of all this exposure. You know, there's a great fireball in the sky that will burn you. Did you know it's up there beaming proton rays down at us? Who knew? Who knew? There have been game crazes before. There was the Flappy Bird craze. There was, the guy who made Flappy Bird, nice kid, Vietnamese kid, wasn't a professional programmer. He actually pulled it. He said, people are wasting too much time on this game. I don't like it. I'm pulling it. It's scaring me. Angry Birds, yeah. I don't think that, Candy Crush, sure. There's never been anything like this. I was just in the park because, I had to pick up a few Pokemon on the way into work. And there's two, not one, but two father-son teams going around, fathers and sons, going around playing the game with each other, talking to people, bringing people out into our town squares, So if you're looking askance and saying, what is wrong with people? No, this is good. This is people. It's the return of the town commons, which was, filled with people who weren't communicating. They were hustling around at work. Now we're kind of like, it's like a party. And you're going to see, we're going to see, and we already are, the stories. Two young men walked to their death off a cliff or whatever. They would have walked. They weren't just playing Pokemon Go. Can I just say this? First of all, if you know the game mechanics, you don't need to go off a cliff. You don't need the Pokemon come to you. You can just stay where you are. More dangerous, perhaps, but this has always been a problem with people engaged in their phones, walking into traffic or something like. Be careful, folks. Be careful. Pay attention to your surroundings. No Pokemon is worth getting run over. But I think you're going to see the media, a little hysteria, Robbers using Pokemon Go to lure people down dark alleys. Well, don't go down a dark alley. Come on. Thing is, there's plenty of them around all over the place. Now people, of course, are saying, oh, it's a fad. Don't worry. In 2 weeks, it'll be over. I'm not sure that's the case. Our 13-year-old, with two of his friends, went to the dog park. They haven't been there in years. He prefers to stay at home and play Team Fortress and Call of Duty. He was out in the dog park at 9 o'clock last night with his friends. There were a bunch of other people playing that game, walking. There's another thing, because the game doesn't measure your distance in miles. It measures it in kilometers. I think this is a secret plan to go metric. This is going to force us all. Apparently, searches for metric conversion calculators have skyrocketed because people want to know. So I'll give you a hint. Just multiply times 6 and then divide by 10 if you want to get the decimal right. So if you've gone 20 kilometers, that's 12 miles. Multiply by 6. Little hint. Save you some time. What do you think of the Pokemon Go craze? And, what's your level? What's your team? Team Valor. I'm a level 14 and a half. I slowed down over the last couple of days. Couldn't get outside. Oh, wait a minute. There's a wild doo-doo-o. I got to go. We'll take a break. We'll be back. 8888 Ask Leo. We don't have to talk about Pokemon Go. I think it's I don't think there's anything like this ever in the history of apps. I don't think so. Phenomenal. 8888 Ask Leo. Website techguylabs.com. Let's talk high tech right after this. A great nation divided between Team Valor and then those other guys. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. Actually, the thing that really is it's consuming a lot of people's attention these days with Pokemon Go is, why are the servers always down? Why are the servers always down? And you might even ask, why do they keep rolling out to more countries? And, well, it's a challenge, I think, for Niantic, the company that makes Pokemon Go. I don't think anybody... we don't know numbers, but I don't think anybody could imagine that anything would be this successful. They did say they were going to slow the rollout, but I think at the same time, they want to capitalize on all the attention. It's a tough one. And I don't think, you know... People are saying, well, they're making lots of money. They're making millions of dollars a day on this. Why can't they buy more servers? I think they're buying the servers as fast as they can. I just think there's just not enough capacity. The world is not prepared for this insanity. You're not. I could tell just the way you're looking at me. Heather Hammond's not playing the game. You're too grown up. You're an adult.
Turns out I have things to do.
Yeah. No desire at all?
Things.
No interest.
I downloaded it. Maybe I'll take a look at it while we're on the air today.
Yeah.
I did just get a call from a little kid asking if you knew when they would be back online.
Yeah.
And I said,
"Well,
go
I don't know."
Play. No.
Yeah, go out and play. Well, no, that's what. But see, that's what's too good about this. This is going out and playing, and walking, because you can't play Pokemon Go just sitting on your duff. You have to go somewhere. You have to walk. There's lots of advantages in, for the player who does walk, puts some miles on. And the folks at Niantic who designed it said that was their intent. They wanted to design a game that got people out and walking around and talking to each other. That was kind of the idea.
Yeah, they need to fix it so that people are looking at traffic, though.
Well, nothing's perfect. Nothing's perfect in this world, right? You can't... But I do think there is this divide, and I see people like you looking at people like me
derisively,
saying, "What is? Why are you? Are you? What's wrong with you?" And I guess you just you either get it or you don't. I don't know. You know what's? If you're a small business person, the smartest thing to do, and our local bookstore is doing this, Copperfield's bookstore, and I think people are probably doing it all over the country, is to put a lure. If you are a PokeStop, and these were identified many moons ago by people playing Niantic's previous game, Ingress. That's why the PokeStops are kind of odd. They're not necessarily the landmarks in an area, and sometimes they're inappropriate landmarks in an area, like Auschwitz or the Holocaust Museum. And sometimes they're personal people's homes, and there are ways to get off that list. But most of around here, it's mostly murals. Apparently, the Ingress players around here love murals particularly, like the mural across the street. But if you're a coffee shop or a bookstore and you're lucky enough to have a PokeStop near you, what you can do is place a lure in it. And you can buy lures. I think they're a couple of bucks. What some coffee places are doing is we'll give you a free cup of coffee if you set a lure. Because what a lure does is for the next half hour, it spits out Pokemon. It lures Pokemon, but where there be Pokemon Go players. And so they show up, and then maybe they'll have a cup of coffee or read a book or buy a sandwich. And I think it's a very interesting idea for businesses to do that. If you go to any of the parks in our area anyway, and I would guess this is true all over the world now, there are usually lures there. People go to the, which is, I think, also an interesting social phenomenon. People go to the park and set a lure because they want more people to come and play with them. And what happens is you see these groups of people, usually three or four, sometimes young, sometimes old. There seems to be no age discrimination, staring at their phones and occasionally swiping up. That's the universal sign of a Pokemon Go player. the upstroke. I know it seems like I'm talking about this a lot, and it's not because of my own fascination with the game, which I admit, but I don't think we've seen anything viral like this ever. I mean, not even Oppo Gangnam Style. Well, that was pretty viral.
Yeah.
But that was going to be a flash in the pan, because how many times can you listen to that same song? Apparently 1,000, but after that. But I think this game, especially if Niantic, the developer, evolves it, which they say they're going to do, they're going to add trading, for instance, so that you could, if you've got an excess number of Pokemon, you could trade with a friend, build a team. I suspect they're going to build this in some interesting ways, and this could be even, this is bigger than Uber. This is big.
Oh, this is a rocket. I mean, I was here a week ago, and you had just started playing, and we're talking about it, and now it's taken
over
the world.
10 days ago. 10 days.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And I don't think it's going away anytime soon. Sorry, folks. It's too much fun. Anyway, enough of that. 8888 Ask Leo. You have lined up some fabulous callers for the show. And
yeah,
I,
back
I don't,
to the real world.
I don't know. Is it? Is it? Which
I can't
is,
tell anymore.
Which is the real world, is it? I mean, is it the coup in Turkey? Is it the tragedy in Nice? Is it the tragedy in Dallas and Baton Rouge and Minneapolis? Is it those tragedies? Is that the real world? Or is a bunch of people going out, playing a game, having fun, talking to each other, getting exercise, getting fresh air? Is that the real world? I would prefer, I kind of like this other real world. And I don't think it's escapism. I think it's in some ways more real.
It's the great unifier.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I'd make the case for that. Anyway, who should I start with?
David in Wichita Falls.
He is line 5. Is that right? Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, let me see. Did I do something wrong? I did it. Did I do it again? Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Fine, thanks. I've got I called a couple weeks ago about this Dell XPS 8700. I told you the wrong price. I said $549. It was actually $699. But anyway, whenever I started up, I get this WDDM service not running. I Googled it, but I don't know I still don't know what it means. Apparently I don't need it because it's not doing anything. But it pops up every time I turn it on.
Yeah, so this is, you have Western Digital hard drives in there.
Yes, I do.
And so this is, I guess it's the smart drive stuff.
Well, it's an external drive.
Smartware, yeah. So, yeah, you don't really need it. I guess, did you get software with the external drive?
Yeah.
I would reinstall that. You don't need it. It doesn't do nothing. It's a USB hard drive. What do you need WDDM for?
Okay.
I think it's just a little, what it is a little bit of software running in your taskbar that lets you kind of, it's basic. You know what it is? It's an ad for Western Digital. Because companies realize if we keep stuff visible on the screen, you'll see it and you'll remember our brand name. And then the next time you go to the store, you'll buy Western Digital. You don't need that.
No.
Windows is rife with that. In fact, really, this is why I really don't, unless you have to use Windows, like you're a gamer or you'd use it in business, I do not recommend Microsoft Windows. I'll talk a little more about that. I'm rapidly turning against commercial software in general. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The fix is I would reinstall the software or unplug the drive, reboot with the drive unplugged, then plug the drive in. And what that will do is it'll go through the plug and play and reinstall it as well. No, this is, I know, it's not the Windows display driver. It's Western Digital. And it's not necessary. Because it's a USB drive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time to talk home theater with Scott Wilkinson. He's our home theater guru from the AVS Forum. He also hosts the Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/HTG Gee, hello, Scott. How are you? You know what we never asked? What kind of TV do you have?
Well, it changes. It switches out because I get things in for review. And
so you will take your main living room TV out and put in a different TV?
Well, it's not my living room, actually. It's my home theater.
Oh, you have a home theater. Even better.
I have a home theater.
Do you have a TV in the living room?
No. We have no TV in the... in fact, when we first moved into this house 18 years ago, we both, my wife and I both said, you know what? The living room is going to be a TV-free zone.
Isn't that awesome? Isn't that ironic, too, given the...
Yeah, I know, because I'm the TV
occupation.
Guy, right?
How about... well, we did... My wife and I did that, but we said in the bedroom. No TV in the bedroom.
Oh, interesting, because we do have a TV in the bedroom.
See, I would... Okay, it's just personal preference, but I'd rather have one in the living room than in the bedroom.
Right. Well,
it's too tempting to lie in bed and watch TV, and that's the last thing I really want to do.
Well, and you're right about that. You know, certainly it will keep you up longer.
Johnny Carson always said that he knew that he was mostly being seen between a pair of feet at the end of the bed. That's how people watched him.
It's interesting because I do have a theater, you know, because this is my profession. So that's where the TV is.
Sure, that makes sense. And is it dark? Tell us about it. Is it dark?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's very dark. It's not something that most people would do. I painted it, the entire room, a very dark, very neutral gray. It's almost black. But I decided that painting the walls and ceiling really true black would be a little oppressive.
A lot of photographic experts, you know, photographers, people who do photo retouching, video editing, do what something called 50% gray,
right,
which is basically neutral, neither black nor white, but neutral.
Right. I did mine in actually a 10% gray, so it's very
pretty
dark.
Yeah,
very dark, and it's there's a particular company that specializes in very particular paint colors for visual arts called Munsell. And so this is called Munsell Gray. Hmm. And you can get it in matte or gloss. Mine is matte, of course, because you want as little reflection off the walls and ceiling
as possible. That makes sense. Yeah. You just basically want the walls to fall off to nothing, right?
To disappear.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And how about, do you have blackout curtains or are there?
I do. I have blackout curtains, black carpet. And so I can control
a black
the light in
carpet.
There.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So that room becomes a black hole anytime, day or night.
And that's where you'll move a TV in or out to review it. You don't have a TV that you own.
Well, actually, I do own a Pioneer Curo.
Nice. No, that's
which is a plasma. It's a 1080p, not high dynamic range, as we have said. At some point, I will probably buy a more modern TV with high dynamic range and 4K or UHD and that sort of thing. But for the moment, I've got things coming in and out. At the moment, what I have is an Epson LS10000 projector.
Yeah.
On a 90-inch screen.
Holy cow. And what kind of screen do you use?
At the moment, what I have is from Seymour Screen Excellence. It's called the Enlitor 4K. It's an acoustically transparent woven screen. So it's a material that's actually woven, which allows sound to pass through it, which is why it's called acoustically transparent. And the reason I have that is because the way the screen and the room is set up, I have to put the speakers actually behind the screen, which is not a bad thing. It's exactly how commercial cinemas set up their systems as well. All commercial cinemas, any commercial cinema you go into, will have its speakers, its front speakers anyway, behind the screen.
Hmm.
And the sound comes through the screen. Now, in the commercial cinema, typically, it's what's called a perf or perforated screen. So there's little tiny pinholes in the screen, and that lets the sound come through. But more recently, for home theater applications, there has become another way to do that, which is using a woven material, which naturally has like little tiny pinhole spaces between the fibers that are woven together. And I prefer that because it has less effect on the sound. You might think, well, wait a second, you've got a speaker behind the screen. It's putting out sound. That sound is having to pass through these tiny little pinholes. And in a perforated screen, that does cause a problem that you need to EQ somewhat, equalize, change the frequency pattern somewhat of the speaker in order to compensate for the sound coming through these tiny little pinholes. Whereas a woven screen, for a reason that I don't quite yet understand altogether, doesn't require as much equalization or careful speaker placement. It just works better.
Now, what kind of speakers do you have? Do those get rotated in and out as well?
Well, not as often, because it's really a pain in the you-know-what.
I would think moving a TV would be fairly...
Well, yeah, but there's only one of those.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's five or six speakers.
Or seven or eight or
seven or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Now, so at the moment I have PSBs, which is a Canadian company, very well known and very well respected. I love Paul Barton. He's the P and the B of PSB, is a wonderful speaker designer. So I really like those speakers. However, I will tell you this. You will probably ask me, what kind of receiver do I have? And my receiver just died.
Oh, no. Well, that's good.
Which is good, because I'm going to get a new one.
Don't those of us who do this kind of thing like it when old equipment goes? Because
yes, that means, oh, I've got to get a new
one. There's no choice. No choice. So do you have an Atmos system at home?
I will as soon as I get my new system. I don't right now, which is why I'm kind of glad that my receiver died. It was an older Pioneer, and it didn't have Atmos. And so now, I mean, I should have replaced it some time ago, but... You know, things happen.
It's a sad irony of the case that the people who review hi-fi equipment don't make enough money to actually own the hi-fi equipment that they're reviewing in general, right? It is not exactly a high-paying gig, right?
Usually not. That's right. And getting less so over time.
Yeah, and this stuff is really can be very, very expensive.
Well, yes, it can be. That is absolutely true. But it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
So that's the good news, is that as technology progresses, you find the pricing going down, at least on digital electronics. I've always said that digital electronics, good quality, high-quality digital electronics, the price will fall as it develops. High-quality analog electronics will always be expensive. So if you're a two-channel audio person and you really like your analog tube gear and so on and so forth, that's always going to be expensive, always.
Well, what I like about you and what I think is most valuable is you talk and look at the very high-end stuff knowing that it will filter down to us.
Yes.
And ultimately, what we like to talk about on the show is stuff that normal people can afford.
Right.
Because if a $10,000 TV or an $80,000 speaker system is just not...
It's not practical.
Not practical for
most people. That's right. That's right. But it is going to filter down. That's exactly right. We just had a news thing today about a 100-inch TV from Hisense for $10,000. Now, that's still a lot of money.
But it's a lot less than it was.
I mean, a 100-inch LCD TV would be $100,000.
Right. So I remember.
That's 10%.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing.
I remember having a 108-inch TV from Sharp that we showed on live with, it was back with Kelly and Regis.
Yes.
They had to fly it in the belly of a 747. That's the only way they could. And it didn't work.
And it didn't even work.
Scott Wilkinson, you'll find more at twit.tv/HTG. That's his Home Theater Geeks podcast. And, of course, at avsforum.com where he writes. And great stuff there. He's turned AVS Forum, which was always a great forum, into a great magazine as well. Thank you, Scott. We'll talk again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that's the famous one. when they unpacked it, it came in a truck in a giant case.
Giant crate,
and they unpacked it, and there was a line way down.
Man.
And they called Japan. The Japanese engineers are on the line with the Japanese engineers there, and finally they just said, "Well, just don't mention it. We can't fix it. It's broken."
You know, because it was going to be on national TV, I would have thought they would have sent a Japanese engineer with it.
They did. Oh no, it had Japanese engineers with it.
Oh, okay.
No, they had, because it was at CES. They flew it in the jumbo jet to New York.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Believe me, Sharp jumped through hoops with this thing. But
sure they did.
There's
I'm
only
sure.
a few of these. And at some point, there's no time. You know, the show's tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they just said, you know, we can't fix it. It's broken. And and just don't mention there's a line there. But, you know, with the content we were showing, you really couldn't tell.
You couldn't tell.
No.
Do you remember how much, what the quote-unquote list price of that thing was?
I think it was $120,000. They were very reluctant to say a price because it really wasn't for sale. It was a showpiece.
Right.
Remember, there was this, for a couple of years, race between Sharp and
Panasonic.
Panasonic have the biggest LCD.
Right. Who had the biggest screen?
At CES. And this was the...
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, maybe they sold 100 of them to Shaq and people like that.
Yeah,
because
it was so big,
you couldn't get it through the door. You'd actually have to take off the roof of the house to
right.
put it in the house.
Well, this Hisense one is very interesting because it's what's called an ultra-short throw projector in a cabinet. So basically, it's a box that you put up almost right next to the wall, and it shoots up onto a screen and gives you 100
inch. So it's not direct view, image. Though. That's interesting.
Not in the sense of being an LCD. No, yeah. it's a projector. Yeah. But it's not a projector hanging from the wall at the other end of the room.
Yeah.
You can't walk
well,
in the middle
like
of the light.
It's kind of like
those
old Diamond Vision Mitsubishi
sort
projectors,
of, yeah.
right? They were all in one units. God, those are terrible.
Well, yeah.
We've come a long way since that. Holy cow.
We've come a long way.
Yeah.
They're claiming this is going to be 4K, and they didn't. The press release wasn't very informative. We don't know whether it's going to be HDR. We don't know what the imaging technology is. I suspect it's going to be DLP because Texas Instruments just came out with a new 4K DLP
That's
chip.
That's still around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No
you
kidding.
Know the weirdest thing about DLP? You can find it in either the super inexpensive, really cheapy projectors or in commercial cinema
right.
digital
Runco
projectors.
Uses them. Yeah, we have DLP in our movie theater here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nothing in the middle.
Right.
It's right. The middle is all LCD from Epson mostly and LCOS from JVC and Sony.
Do they still does it still use the wheel, the rainbow color wheel for
the single chip DLP does the super cheapy DLP projectors.
That's why
yeah,
it's
they
so
still
cheap.
Use the
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Exactly.
Interesting.
And the theater ones, the commercial cinema ones, all use three chips, one for red, one for green, and one for blue. So no color wheel in those. And the best ones, of course, use lasers for illumination. And, you know, that's what Dolby Cinema is all about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I've got my tickets for Star Trek in Dolby Cinema.
Ooh.
Next Thursday night.
Oh, really? Next Thursday. Do you think it's going to be
yeah.
good?
Well, I have no idea if it's going to be good or not. I mean, I like the first one, the first J.J. Abrams reboot, I thought was pretty good. The second one.
I loved the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, the Khan one I wasn't as happy with.
Right. I liked
so
it.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
I like it.
Can you stick
sure.
around for
hey.
The top?
Sure, happy to.
All right. Thank you.
You.
It's a burning thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask. Leo, I need some help, Heather. I need my attorney, Heather Hammon. I don't know. Does this count as Plugola? You remember last week we had the creators of the Neutralizer Anti-Bad Breath Toothbrush. He called in. Maybe you weren't here for that. Maybe that was Kim Schaffer. And I let him on the air, and now he's sent me some toothbrushes. Well, one.
Oh.
Am I now, is that Plugola?
Well,
or is that reverse Plugola? I did get a toothbrush. I need to disclose that, but I didn't know I was going to get a toothbrush last week. I didn't even know he was, frankly, calling in. So that can't be called Plugola. Or do I have to report this to the FCC?
I don't think so. Let's use it, though, and see how it works.
Nathan's, he says it's not over $100. Now, I don't know. Believe me, this is serious business. We have to take a test. We Clear Channel employees. Every year on this stuff, and even more like on the emergency tones. I guess some disc jockey working for Clear Channel really got in a lot of trouble for accidentally or intentionally playing the emergency broadcast tones, and now I have to take a test like every 3 months. You know you can't do that, right? I know. I'm not going to. I promise. I swear. I have no occasion to. But I don't know about the Plugola thing. So Nathan, my attorneys. Staten and Hammon say it's okay. It's okay to have this, because otherwise I'll be glad to send. I'll just, you know what I'll do? I'm going to send this to the FCC. I'm just going to give it to them and say, I got this brush. I'm sorry. I didn't know. 8888, ask Leo. These, you got to be careful, you know? This goes back to the 50s, the whole scandal where DJs were taking money for playing records. I don't play records, but I do. But I occasionally talk about websites. That's not that different, is it? I want you to know, if I mention a website, it's not because they're giving me money. Unless it's during a commercial, in which case it's because they're giving me money. But that's a... Gloria in North Hollywood. Hello, Gloria. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Whenever I turn on my Windows 7, I get a screen that says unknown error message, error code 8302, press F1 to resume. I was wondering if you could tell me how to fix this or get rid of it. To add to that, last Saturday, I went to download Windows 10 at 9 a.m., Sunday at 9 a.m. It was still going at only 23% complete. Does the error code have anything to do with that slow download?
Oh, Lord. Why, Microsoft, why? There is an error code. First of all, who made the computer?
Acer.
Okay. There is an error code that has to do with the BIOS on Acers. Does this come up at the very beginning when you first turn it on or when Windows starts?
When I first turn it on. Yeah. And then after I press F1, it takes me to the login.
Yeah. So this is a BIOS problem. Oh, man. Why should any human alive have to worry about this? I don't know. You know, computers, when they started 40 years ago, were really, you know, personal computers, were a hobbyist thing. And we were expected, and this is the... You know, this is where I come from. We're expected to figure this stuff out. And, you know, this was part of being on the cutting edge. But now we're 40 years later. And these are used by normal people all the time in normal situations. And they're not, and you're not a hobbyist. You just want to use the darn thing to get work done.
Right.
And they're still kind of in this flaky hobbyist state. And in order to do this, you've got maybe some hobbyist level tweaking to do. So the BIOS is a chip in your computer that when you power up the computer, it's the first program that runs. Before Windows, it runs. And you're getting an error in it, which means it could be damaged or corrupted. It sounds like things are kind of working, but then the Windows 10 install stalled. By the way, it's an hour install. It's not taking a long time. It's stalled. It's stopped.
Oh.
So I know. This is awful. So what you need to do is go to the Acer. I hate to do this to you, but you need to refresh your BIOS. You need to go to the Acer website and get the updated BIOS for it. How long have you had it?
Since about 2010.
Yeah, it may just be the battery in your motherboard.
But let me tell you, let me go back. I deleted my keyboard drivers about 3 years ago.
Why?
The teacher, just by mistake.
Oh.
And the teacher who teaches computers to us put the drivers back on. And that's when it started.
Oh, this could be a keyboard error. Okay,
oh, really?
So somebody in the chat room said... Unplug the keyboard and reboot and see if it goes away.
Oh.
Now, you're going to not be able to do anything, but after you reboot, you could plug the keyboard back in. It's a USB keyboard?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so unplug the keyboard, reboot the machine with the mouse, see if you get that error. You may not. If you don't, good news.
Oh, great.
Good news. Then you plug the keyboard in, and one hopes that Windows will go, oh, it's a new keyboard. And fix this problem. It is a non-important problem.
Oh, okay.
But it's causing problems. And by the way, you only have 13 more days to install Windows 10 for free.
I was going to do it again today.
Yeah, you want to fix this, don't you?
Yeah. But you think it would take 24 hours?
No, it takes about an hour. It's just how long it takes to download.
Oh. Okay.
It's not a long process at all, unless you have a very, very slow internet. Even then, it's going to be a few hours, not 24. It's stalled. It's not moving forward. It's got stuck. And it could be this. It could be the hard drive. It is an older machine. Hard drive could be flaky. If you brought it to me in the shop, if I had a shop, what I would do is I would back up your data off the old hard drive. I would wipe the drive and install Windows 7 again, clean. See if that fixes the whole problem. This is a pain for you to do, but this is what a tech would do. If that does, then before I restored your data, I would then install Windows 10, make sure it gets activated. That means now you have a license for that machine in Windows 10 forever. Then I would wipe the drive again and install Windows 10 one more time. So it's just a pure Windows 10 install. You won't, almost certainly this will get rid of that error. And if it doesn't, then I would go to the Acer site, download a new BIOS, fix the BIOS. Because it could be that also. That is a common BIOS error. And then I would restore your data and give you the machine back saying this should work just fine now.
Oh, God. I'm not a techie.
That's why nobody should own a copy of Windows. Nobody should own a copy of Windows. Windows is a virus. If you have to, you know you do because you use Excel at work or Quicken, QuickBooks Online or... because you're a PC gamer. And those people all have either I have IT departments or enthusiasts who know how to fix this stuff. Mm-hmm. Normal people, I feel for you because this was your only choice, right? And you spent a lot of money on this machine and you want to use it. But the thing is, it's a house of cards just waiting to tumble down on you. And it did. And now you got to dig yourself out and it's non-trivial.
Okay, so the first...
Next computer, buy a Chromebook, okay?
Oh, okay.
Maybe now's the time. Like, we're talking $300.
I know.
But if the tech, if you do bring it to a shop and the tech says it'll be $400, say, I don't want it. I want a Chromebook instead.
Oh, no. I wouldn't bring it to a shop. The last person I talked to bring it to some shop, they wiped his computer and then fixed it. So he lost a paid program on his computer, expensive paid program.
Right. Okay, this is a whole nother problem, which is why the heck would you sell somebody an expensive program that they can't reinstall?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The whole industry is not set up for normal people. It's set up for companies with IT departments. And if that's you, then Windows is fine. In fact, that's probably the operating system you're going to use. But for almost all normal people, I'd see you either get an iPad or get a Chromebook. And so these are designed for normal people. They do 90% of what normal people want to do. Not great for editing movies or launching rocket ships, but everything else fine.
Okay.
If you're not editing movies or launching rocket ships, get a Chromebook.
Okay, so the first thing is start the computer without the keyboard.
Yeah, see if that works. You may be able to just fix it that way.
And then if that doesn't work, go to Acer.
Yeah, get the drivers for the BIOS for that particular hardware. Good luck. Oh, my gosh. You have my deepest sympathy. I don't know what to tell people anymore. It's a house of cards. The thing is crumbling. And if you're buying a new computer, really seriously think, do I have to get Windows? Is there a reason I have to get Windows? Because if you don't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What do you do? What do you tell somebody like her? I mean, I don't know what the answer is. This is a glorious, a terrible conundrum. You shouldn't have a product in your house that you rely on others to. Well, I guess that's normal, right? If your washing machine goes, it goes. I don't know. Pad 02910 says, even as an IT department, we deployed Windows 10 to 100 PCs this week, and it was a nightmare. At 6 years old, it's probably time to buy a new one. And, you know, if for most people, a Chromebook is a really good... And you could spend $500 to get a very nice Chromebook, and you wouldn't have these problems, right? I know. We got a dishwasher that's never worked right. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is.
Sky, hello. All yours, my friend.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the numbers. I appreciate that very much. Having some interesting conversations in the chat room about this new Hisense ultra short throw projector thing, and Twisted Mister, I think, was and a couple other people mentioned that, wait, didn't LG do that a few years ago? Why, yes, they did. It was called the Hecto. I have no idea why it was called the Hecto, but it was also an ultra short throw projector in a cabinet, put it up near the wall, and it shoots up a 100-inch image. It was 1080p, and I saw it once at CES a few years ago when they announced it, and it didn't look that great, but it was also out on the show floor. It wasn't even in a room. Now, it's supposed to be a replacement for a flat panel TV, so it should work, ideally, in a room with ambient light, because flat panel TVs do, because they have enough light coming out of them. But this one, I don't think really did. The Hisense is going to be laser illuminated, so it has a greater chance of maybe serving that purpose. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing I wanted to mention, we were talking about my system at home and how it continually changes, and I'm about to get a new receiver, and Leo didn't ask the question, well, what receiver are you getting? And the answer is I'm getting a Denon. And the reason I'm getting a Denon, first of all, I knew I needed Atmos capability. And I also wanted DTS:X capability, which is another immersive audio format, the latest one on the block. And we don't have much content in it yet, but if we do, I want to be ready for it. And I also wanted Oro 3D. Now, some of you may go, if you know about Oro 3D, you may go, what? Why do you need that? There's no content in it or anything. Well, there isn't much. That's true. There are some European discs with it. There are some Blu-rays with it, music Blu-rays. And, as a professional covering this stuff, I felt it was a good idea to have the capability in case I needed it. And Denon and Marantz are the only companies that have Oro available for their AV receivers. Otherwise, you have to go up to the Trinov or the Datasat preamp processor. And those are in the five figures. And then you need to buy power amps. So I said, I don't really need that level. So I'm going to go with a receiver. And so that's what I decided to do. And Denon's a fine make, too. I mean, if Denon or Marantz weren't good products, weren't good receivers anyway, then I'd say, oh, well, I can't do Oro. But they are very good. So I said, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. The other thing that was important to me was to have four amplifiers for overhead channels, along with 5.1 regular, which means you need 9 channels of amplification. And there aren't very many of those. Those are the more higher-end products, AVRs. So I went with the Denon X6200, which has 9 amplifier channels. I could have gone there are fewer still, but a few AV receivers with 11 channels. So you could do 7.1.4 with 4 overhead channels. But my room is too small for 7 channels. There's no need for 7 channels in my room. So 5.1.4 is perfectly fine. So that is why I chose that particular receiver, and I am waiting to receive it. We shall see. Let's see. Any other questions? Let's see. Oh, Twisted Mister says the Hecto was laser-based as well. You know, I think you're right. That's a good point. That was a blue phosphor hybrid or yellow phosphor hybrid laser, I'm pretty sure, which means basically a blue laser, and the light from the blue laser strikes a spinning wheel coated with a yellow phosphor. And yellow can be split into red and green, which is how you get blue from the laser and red and green from the yellow phosphor. I would expect the Hisense product that I was talking about probably is the same, because it's a less expensive way to do laser than having a red laser, a green laser, and a blue laser. That's pretty expensive. So I would be pretty shocked if it was anything but laser. They did say laser illuminated, but they didn't say exactly what it was. It's going to be a hybrid, I'm almost certain. Raptora, which TV manufacturer has the most comprehensive end-of-life program for responsible recycling of their old TVs? That's a great question. I don't know the answer to it, but you have stimulated me to research and try and find the answer. That is a great question. Web 0034, did I have to upgrade my household electrical supply? I did when we moved in. I now have a 200-amp box, 200-amp service coming into the home with dedicated specially grounded lines into the home theater. So I have no ground loops or hums or anything like that. I got only a few seconds left. Web 8149. Where did I buy my new Denon receiver? From Denon. I took advantage of the fact that I'm in the industry and they sell directly to those of us in the industry.
Oh, so which one did you get again?
The X6200.
Recommend it? You like it? Denon stuff.
I like Denon stuff. I don't have it yet, so I'll know for sure when I get it. But I'm confident it's going to be very good.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Have a great week.
Thanks. You too. Bye now.
Bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and Pokemon Go. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, use Skype or some sort of voice over the internet product. And call that number, and it should be toll free. 888-827-5536. Our website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. What do I do? What do I do? And this has been a problem. I've been doing a computer call-in show since 1991, I think. So 25 years. Wow. And when we first started, the people who were interested in PCs in 1991 were, you know, enthusiasts and understood, well, you're going to have interrupt conflicts and all sorts of stuff. And they were willing to roll up their sleeves and get down into it and mess with it and solve it. And so you spent a lot of time talking about that kind of stuff. It was probably like calling a car show, you know, and being told, well, what you need to do is pull those plugs there and scrape off the carburetor. And you put them back in, they should be all right. But that's not something a normal car driver wants to do. And nowadays, here we are 25 years later, most people who use computers are not enthusiasts. You know, if your dishwasher breaks, there's somebody you can call. And they'll come out to your house and they'll, you know, generally speaking, they'll fix it. Microwave oven, same thing. Vacuum cleaner, you bring it to the vacuum cleaner shop. What do you do for PCs? There are PC repair places, but they don't. Most of the time when I talk to people, they don't seem very happy with the results. Is it still the case that if you're going to own a Windows PC, and to some extent a Mac computer, a personal computer, a general purpose personal computer, that you still have to be the geek who can fix it? It's a lot easier if you are. And, you know, I look sometimes with trepidation at setting up a new system thinking, oh, what fresh hell is this? How many hairs am I going to tear out for this one? And so as a result, the industry's response has been to make stuff that's much simpler. And I think to some extent has been widely adopted. People like it. And the two choices are tablets, primarily iPads, and computers based on Google's Chrome OS, which is actually Linux. Google did an interesting thing. They said, how can we take Linux, a free open source operating system that is absolutely for hardcore geeks, how can we take this and make it so everybody can use it, a normal person can use it? And they kind of did that. That's what Chrome OS is. On top of Linux, they've really locked it down. So you can't really do much. You can run a Chrome browser and any of the extensions for Chrome browsers. And that's pretty much it. If you're more sophisticated, you can kind of get under the hood and tweak things and even run Linux if you want. But pretty much the people who buy it are going to use it as a browser. Now, they've done an interesting thing. In fact, I just got the developer edition of – they've put the Android Play Store on Chrome OS, and that's going to be widely available this fall. It's still unreliable. I have a Chromebook Pixel, which is Google's kind of reference edition of a Chrome OS device. It's a beautiful laptop. It was expensive. It was $1,000. But it's a beautiful, well-made laptop, high-end, beautiful touchscreen. I've always liked it. Great battery life and super reliable. You can't get a virus on it. And even if you could, they have this feature called Power Wash that just scrubs the whole thing. Bad guys can't change the operating system in any way because the operating system won't start up. It actually does a check and says, is everything the way it's supposed to be? If not, it says, not going to run. You need to power wash me, power wash, and you're back to the way it was. And because it's a cloud-focused operating system, and this is the negative of it, it really likes to be online all the time, although for most of us, that's not so hard. We're pretty much online all the time, at home, at work, even as you travel. It can store your data, your critical settings, all that stuff on the cloud, the Google Cloud. So power washing it isn't a big deal. You then log on to your Google account, and all of the settings, the applications, everything you install just goes back into it, and you're back exactly the way you were before. It's really a really great way to do it, and I highly recommend it. The only limitation is if you say, I have to have desktop Microsoft Office, or I have to have Adobe Photoshop, or I can't live without a video, you know, Adobe Premiere video editing. If you need high-end, dedicated kind of PC applications, you won't be happy. But that's a specialized group. And in general, that group either, as I said, has IT support, someone at the office who's, you know, professionally trained to do this. By the way, nice job if you can get it. Guaranteed work for life. Or they're enthusiasts themselves and they know how to keep it running. You know, the video editors who use PCs or Macs to do video editing don't have the same number of problems because they don't use it as a general purpose computer. It's kind of a purpose built computer. They don't go around surfing the net and downloading software and messing with it. And if they do, they pay the price. And they need this for work. So generally speaking, that's fine. But for a normal user, something simpler would be so much better, I think. So much better. Now, if you're a gamer, well, then you have to get a PC. Although, look at the success of console gaming. And I think a lot of the reason that Xbox and PlayStation are so successful is because, you know, it's kind of the same thing. It just does the game. You put the game in, it plays, and that's it. It's pretty reliable, right? It's this general purpose computer that is a real pain, really challenging. And I think for most of you, it's time to say, enough. Let's get something that's going to be more reliable, more appliance-like. May not be as flexible, but because it's more appliance-like, it's more reliable. Mark in Honolulu, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Morning, Leo. How are you?
Aloha. Is it a beautiful day in paradise?
It's a wonderful day. You got trade winds blowing about 10 miles an hour and about 80 degrees.
I like that. Keeps it a little cooler, doesn't it?
Boy, when they stop, you sure notice the humidity up there.
Yeah. Hey, hang on. We're going to take a break. I just wanted to say hi. You're looking for a hosting company? Maybe I can help you. We'll talk about it when we come back, okay?
Fantastic.
Enjoy a few minutes to yourself in paradise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No ransomware in a Chromebook. That is true. No ransomware in a Chromebook. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, Mark, and Honolulu, thanks for your patience. What's going on?
Good morning, sir. I'm on my lanai in overlooking Kalakaua Avenue in Waikiki and trying to figure out who's playing Pokemon Go.
Can you see? Okay, so that's interesting. Can you see people walking down the street playing it?
Absolutely. And you'll know, I noticed that when they get into the direct sunlight, they'll stop playing because they can't see
their screens. Suddenly, you know, I used to mock because a lot of times people were reviewing phones will say, well, it's not so good in daylight. And I just think, well, who goes in daylight? But now I understand. You do need a screen that you can see in daylight.
Yeah, Pokemon Go is a night game for sure.
Yeah, especially if you don't want to get sunburned. Yes, I agree. And by the way, I'm sure is true in Honolulu as it is around the rest of the world, but the servers have been slammed today, and there's been some rumor that they're being DDoSed, which is interesting.
My wife convinced me yesterday morning to accompany her on her morning walk, and for the first time I did, with the provision that I get to play Pokemon Go. I got to level 3, and that was in the midst of 4 crashes, and now I know why it was crashing.
Yeah, it's crashing a lot. You see a spinning ball, Pokeball in the upper left-hand corner, ghostly spinning Pokeball. That means it's not connected to the server. Hacker group, the Poodle Corp, that's their name, said that they were behind a DDoS to take down Pokemon. You know, whether they did or not, it's credible only because it's so easy, even with very minimal skills, to do DDoSes these days. So it's not completely impossible, but whatever, you know. I mean, that's just, you know, what's wrong with people? Just, you know, go.
I had a blast playing it.
Isn't it fun? No, I see no problem with that. You don't see, I hope, people wandering onto the street playing it.
Not yet, but when the light changes at the crosswalk,
yeah,
the people that don't move, those are the ones that are,
yeah, playing. You can kind of, there's definitely you can profile them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, keep an eye on that. We want the Honolulu Pokemon Go report. Is usage going up or down? That's what I'm curious about.
I'll keep you updated.
I will. I appreciate it. What can I do for you?
So here's my question, and I knew that you were the only guy that could provide me some guidance on this. So a little over a year ago, I registered my .com domain through GoDaddy, parked it there for 90 days, moved it to iPage and got a nice deal for like $1.99, $2.99 a month web hosting. And my media is with Libsyn. They do a great job too.
Nice. I pay do you do a podcast?
I do media that is an MP3 format, but technically it's not a podcast. It does not come out at a regularly scheduled time.
Yeah, you do an audio something. That's fine.
Correct.
Yeah. And Libsyn is a great server for awesome podcasters. It's really good.
They provide wonderful statistics. I'm really happy with everyone involved until a year goes by, and the day before I go on vacation, I get a bill from iPage for my renewal. And it went from, I was paying, you know, $2 or $3 a month, which is, you know, $25, $36 bucks a year, to $153 a year.
Okay.
Why is that, and how do I get away from that? Now, my site is completely portable. It was built on a WordPress platform. iPage.
You can move it. So that's the good news.
I can move it anywhere. Yeah. No problem.
So if you look at the iPage site, it says introductory prices for the first term of service only automatically renew at the regular rate. In other words, it's $325 a month for the first year. Then it's $12 a month. So your I don't like it when companies do that, but if you understand what you're getting into, that there's an introductory rate and that you will be bumped up, they need to make that very clear, in my opinion, because then you have the option before the year's up to go, oh, I'm moving.
Yeah, it was made clear that it was going to increase. I didn't know exactly to what amount, but I was a little surprised.
Yeah.
So what are my options at this point? Can I negotiate with iPage? Can I just move this to another web hosting company every year?
What they're charging is a little more, frankly, than other companies. Squarespace, I think, is around $8 a month. But it's not out of the ordinary. And it may be, you know, you should see how much you're getting. See, here's the thing is, you need to understand a little bit about how they're doing it. Some companies have servers that are shared, that if somebody else on your server gets busy, you're going to slow down. That's kind of an antiquated way of doing it. I don't know if you've noticed whether you slow down. Maybe you don't get enough traffic to make it, you know, something to worry about. You also pay for support. Do they give you good support? Do they manage your server? Or are you kind of responsible for things like making sure you get the WordPress upgrades in a timely fashion, that kind of thing?
I handle 100% of everything.
Right.
So none of these companies I deal with have any hook into me at all.
So, yeah, that's both good and bad. It means you're responsible. And with WordPress, you know, there's updates every month. You need to apply because WordPress is commonly attacked. And so those security updates are very important. But if you don't mind doing that, I think WordPress is a great platform. But they're not helping you with that either. That should theoretically lower the cost, not increase it. I think you could shop around. I don't know anything about OnePage at all, or iPage, I should say. I don't know anything about them. There are a lot of different people out there.
So do most people just suck it up and pay the $10-$12 a month?
Well, it's not an outrageous amount. It's a little higher. I pay about $7,000 a month for our servers, so you're asking the wrong guy. But but we have numerous dedicated servers, and we have a lot of stuff going on. So it really depends. So in other words, I don't feel like I'm getting ripped off at $7,000 a month, but I'm getting what I pay for, and that's really the question: is what do you need? And can you pay less and still be happy?
Right. And because this is a hobby, you know, and I don't charge anybody anything, it's all free with the service that I do provide. So I want to make my, keep my expenses as low as possible.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'd be careful about going too cheap. This seems a little bit high. There are many, many other places, especially for WordPress hosting. That's what I would look for, is dedicated WordPress hosting, because that's all you're doing, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I would look for that. Do they have a management tool for you, something like cPanel, that lets you manage your server at all? Or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they've got the full accoutrement.
See, that's you're paying for that, too. So that's the trick, is, you have to figure out if what you look at is, how much bandwidth do I get? How much storage do I get? How much service do I get? What tools do I get? And then compare that with other companies. And that's why it's a hard thing to do, because you have to kind of make a matrix of all the other things. I'm not sure. Hosting, it's good to be nimble. You did the right thing, which is not be dependent on them. It'll be an easy thing to bundle up your WordPress install and move it somewhere else. And that's good. You want to be in that position, because my experience with server companies, hosting companies, is they come and go. And that's, by the way, another reason why paying more sometimes is a good thing. A company that is profitable is more likely to stick around than a company that's charging you too little. We'll ask for recommendations. Put them in the show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Johnny Jett is our travel guru. He talks to us from all over the world, shows us how to use technology to travel better. Where are you today, Johnny?
I'm in Stockholm, Sweden.
So jealous.
Yes, it's a beautiful city. I recommend people getting good walking shoes and bring an eye mask, because the sun doesn't set for long here.
What's an eye mask?
Eye mask.
Oh, eye mask, so you could sleep.
Yes.
I was thinking some sort of technology thing.
I must be mumbling.
Eye mask. No. My mind is in the eye. iPhone, iPod, eye mask. Does Apple make a eye mask now?
They should.
are you there for a travel event, or just because?
I'm here for a travel conference, TBEX, and it just ended today. I'm at a barbecue right now.
Oh,
and
man.
I was just looking.
And what do they barbecue in Stockholm? What is
They have
ribs? Do they have
brisket? No, there's no ribs. There's burgers. There's steak. There's
mostly herring.
Salmon.
Mostly fish.
There's herring too.
Herring.
Like,
herring.
But
that's
in a jar, and I'm like, I'm not even going near that. I do not do herring.
Anyway, this is, we were talking off the air. I bet this will be a bad year for travel. Americans who are very and understandably nervous about traveling to France, to Turkey. I think you can't even go to Turkey now, right?
To Brussels.
Brussels.
I'm Belgium. You can't go to Turkey right now. Turkish Airlines, the FAA has just banned Turkish Airlines from flying into the U.S. and out of, I assume, or definitely into the U.S. because of the
security concerns. Understandable. If you saw a video from Istanbul last night or the night before, people were just walking through the security. There was no security, airport security, which means the U.S. can't trust the planes coming in. So I understand why they're doing that, but I imagine some travelers will be stranded there. We were in Istanbul a couple of years ago. We loved it.
Yeah, we're at this conference, and they were one of the sponsors of the conference. They had two big tables this morning. There was no sign of them. It's a mess. And then there's a lot of people who were at the conference who are flying via Istanbul or back home. And my suggestion is, if you're one of those people, I would try and get your ticket reissued by one of their partner airlines. I don't know if they will do it. Or they'll definitely refund the ticket and you just buy another ticket. So depending where you're coming from, the good news is there's a lot of low-fare carriers out there. Norwegian. Look at Norwegian because they fly cheap across the pond. So no matter where you are in Europe, you can always buy a cheap ticket to London or Scandinavia where they fly out of and then buy another ticket to
go to a hub. Go to a big hub, yes. In other words. What would you do? I was thinking when the coup broke out, about Americans, and I'm sure there were thousands, if not more, in Istanbul. It's a real tourist destination. They were advising people to just stay where they are, stay in the hotel.
You got to stay indoors. Do not go outside.
Don't rush to the American consulate. Isn't the American embassy your harbor, your safe harbor in cases like this?
Yeah, but most likely they're locked down. You're not even
they're not going to let you in.
No, one of my buddies, Peter Greenberg, he says to always go to the Canadian embassy.
You can. Your wife is Canadian. Yeah. You can reasonably go there. Yeah.
I don't know if that's good advice, but I would just stay indoors and wait until everything simmers down. It will cool off. And then, I would look at – I actually had a friend of a friend who was at this party who went to Istanbul for one night. They just wanted to see it. And so they went. They were nervous about going, and then the coup happened, and now they're stuck there.
Oh, my goodness.
So talk about bad luck. So I would look at, trying to take a train or a boat and get out and then go to the, Greece and then try and get home.
Wait till it's safe on the streets before you venture out.
Yeah. But I think it will simmer down. And I think the FAA will lift that ban.
Yeah. One hopes.
Yes.
Yeah. So usually you join us with an app, a website. And they're always good. What do you got this week?
Well, by the way, they should have travel insurance. So that's another good reason why to buy travel insurance, because if you have travel insurance for cancel any reason, you always have to read your travel insurance to fine print because you got to make sure that it covers it, because sometimes terrorism and a coup might not even be covered.
Right.
So cancel for any reason travel insurance, and then you're golden.
It's got to be expensive, though.
It's usually 10%. I work with Allianz. They're one of my partners, and they're the leaders. Every time you buy an airline ticket, the website always asks you, do you want to buy travel insurance? It's always by Allianz. Those guys are in every different country, and no matter who you buy it through, you got to read the fine print.
We're getting a little nervous because, as in 2 months, we're flying to Paris, then to Stockholm, and then going around the Baltic. We're going to be 3 days in Russia. That situation's getting less stable. Latvia and Lithuania, and I'm a little nervous.
I wouldn't be nervous. I'm actually here. I was planning on taking this month off, but after the attack in Istanbul, original, and everyone's like, I'm afraid to go to Europe and France. I was like, I'm going. So I'm actually
now's the time.
I'm doing the reverse. Everyone's staying home. I'm going out. You can't be afraid. You got to go. I would definitely be cautious about going to Turkey. I could see being uneasy about France and Belgium, but especially Scandinavia where I am now, and Iceland's the safest of them all.
I love traveling. I'm gonna travel. I'm just gonna. You know what? What are you going to do? We live in a dangerous world no matter where you are.
It sure is. And you can get really good deals. And speaking of good deals, my website today for you is called DealRay. So DealRay.com. So these guys, they actually charge $9.99 a month. But they give you alerts. So whenever there's a really good deal, you'll get a text message, which is key. I wish I did this. because basically the deals that they have are the ones that are like in my newsletter and other people's newsletters. But, you know, not everyone's checking their email.
Right.
But they do usually check their text.
A text alert is a great way to do it. Yeah.
So I just signed up for it a week ago. My friend Jen Leo told me about it. And yesterday I got a text message last night. I was about to go to bed. It was like, you know, 1 a.m. And it said, you know, round trip fares to Europe starting at $294 on SAS and – or no, sorry, on American and or Delta.
I saw you flew to Stockholm on SAS. I saw what you were eating.
Yes.
Man, I love
yes.
SAS.
Oh, SAS is great.
They even have chefs on board. They have – people dressed as chefs with hats and
yeah, they're not chefs, but they're dressed as them.
Oh, okay. And I don't burst my bubble.
I'll tell you a tip with SAS, which I learned this trip. You know, I tried to bid for an upgrade. These are one of the guys who do bidding. So there's a bunch of that's the way all the airlines are going now. If you want to get upgraded, forget about freaking flyers. You now need to bid for an upgrade.
Huh.
So the airlines do not want to lose money. So now some of them are offering. SAS is one of them. And so I put in a bid for business class. I got denied. I put in a bid for like almost $500 one way. I get to the airport and I said, by the way, are there any more seats? And they're like, actually, you could get one. And I got it for $379.
Oh.
A lie flat seat across the pond. That's
And that's worth it. Believe me. I know that sounds like a lot of money. That is so worth it.
So if you want to get upgraded these days, you know, always ask about, you know, can you buy an upgrade?
Yeah.
And these airlines don't want to lose money. They don't want to give it to their freaking flyers.
Think of it like you're buying a hotel room for the day, for the night, for the flight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
DealRay.com. Sign up for those text alerts. Do you want to?
Yes.
We got a minute left. You want to do an app or you want to save
it? I got an app. Okay. Here's an app for if you're coming to Europe or wherever. It's called Piper. So you got to type in Piper Tip App, P-I-P-E-R, and then Tip App. It's only on iOS for right now, but it gives you good general tipping advice.
Yeah, because some countries there isn't any tipping.
Yeah, for example, this app gives you USA, UK, Canada, Italy, and France for free. But if you want to get more, you have to pay. So you can buy all 75 countries that they have for $4.99, which is not a bad deal.
That's one tip.
Or what I did is I bought a region. I bought Scandinavia since I was coming here for 99 cents.
Johnny Jet. Go to johnnyjet.com. Right. He's our travel guru. I'm downloading this. That looks great.
That was less than a minute.
All right. It was 43 seconds.
Okay. So I was like, I still got 10 more seconds.
I'm not going to say 43 seconds. I'm sorry. You're right. It was less than a minute.
Okay.
Thank you, Johnny. Have fun. Right, you must be like jet lagged all the time. I mean,
Oh, my God. My buddy just took a picture of me. He goes, check your email. I go, why? So I check my email. It's me passed out at this conference listening to the keynote. And the keynote was great, but I was so exhausted because I was working most of the night last night and then I had to get up early to go to this conference. And
oh, man.
So, yeah, I'm Johnny Jetlag.
Johnny Jetlag. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Hal's in Thousand Oaks, our next caller. Hi, Hal.
Hello, Leo. I sure hope you can help me.
I hope so, too. Is it a Windows problem? I don't want to help you. Go ahead.
Well, I fall into the category of somebody who aspires someday to get to level of computer dummy, so any help you give me would be appreciated.
Okay, sure.
Back beginning of May, I went into a big box store and I purchased an HP laptop, 15.6 inches, AMD A8, 8 gig of RAM, and 1 terabyte hard drive,
nice.
Suitable for
nice
my
system.
Basic needs.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty nice system, yeah.
Yeah, and it was fine for a number of weeks, and then I began running into a problem where everything was slow. It's as though it didn't have any computing capacity. If I'd go into my Microsoft Word to do a document, I'd hit the keys, but some of the letters wouldn't show up. The cursor was erratic. I tried to...
yeah, it got busy. It wasn't keeping up with you.
That's
the symptom right there, yeah.
And then what really made it terrible is I am given access to some proprietary links for a claims administrator, and I have to have access in order to earn a living. And suddenly, I started getting no access, and interestingly enough, what I thought was unique to me, maybe not, based on reviewing Microsoft community, Windows could not automatically detect this network's proxy settings, and I consulted HP techs, Microsoft techs. They went in.
Are the links on the public internet, or are they on a VPN, or how do you get to them?
Well, I guess
if I had the link, could I click on it and go there?
No. What it does is it gives me access to a computer at a claims administrator.
And you have to run a VPN to get in there?
I'm not sure, but I can tell you this.
How is access protected? Do you have to enter a password?
Well, no. What happens is they mail the links to somebody for whom I do work, and he forwards the emails to me, and I save the links, and I click on them, and I have access. And
well, okay, that ain't the most secure system I ever heard.
Well, all I can tell you is I've been doing this for over a year.
Yeah.
It was working perfectly on my Windows 7 ancient Lenovo until the hard drive finally fried. So that's when I went to the HP. And everything was fine for a number of weeks, and then I started having this problem. And I contacted the HP techs and the Microsoft techs.
Yeah, all right, hold on. I don't need any more of the story. I get the picture.
Okay,
so
well, here's
job...
Here's,
Let me just talk here because I only have a limited amount of time. Job one, you want to download a program called Process Explorer. It's a free program from Microsoft. It's from their SysInternals site. So if you Google, probably Process Explorer is sufficient, but if you need more, SysInternals is one word, SysInternals. Process Explorer is task manager on steroids. It will tell you what's eating up your CPU cycles, what's slowing you down.
Okay, there's one more factor that I think is critical. After all of this, it seems that doing reinstallation of Windows 10 would fix the problem until another Windows update came along. And what I finally figured out is when I looked at the list of the installed updates, if I uninstalled the securities update, everything worked again.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Not an advised procedure.
Well, I was concerned about it, but it's keeping me going.
Well, let me ask you this. So you're saying it's fixing the slowdown or it's fixing the link or both?
It's doing both. But what happens is minute there's another update, I have the problem again and I delete the security update.
Do you know the number of the security update?
Oh, yes, I do. Bear with me just while I pull it up. The last one was KB3172985.
Okay, because now I can look it up and see what it is that it's doing. Do you run any security software?
Yes, McAfee.
Turn it off immediately, uninstall it.
Okay.
That's a piece of junk.
Okay,
and
there was also
almost take all the security off. Windows 10 has plenty of security. That security is almost certainly causing the link issue. And as it should, by the way, because clicking a link in an email is about the worst thing you can do. But it's from a trusted source. You know what you're doing. But it may be blocking it. And also, it could be causing the slowdown by becoming very busy. And I worry that you're having problems with a security update. That's significantly... Okay, so this is the 317-2985...
And then there was a subsequent security update with a different number, and I did the same thing, and it fixed it again.
Yeah. I'm looking at this update. The problem is you need those security updates. They're there for a reason.
Oh, I'm sure of that. It's just that it's the only way I've been able to function.
Yeah, no, I understand. I would say... uninstall, and you might need to go to the McAfee site and download this dedicated uninstaller. I would uninstall McAfee. You have another security program? What's that?
Well, it's Windows Defender, I guess.
Yeah, keep that. That's fine.
Okay.
That's not going to get in your way. McAfee will absolutely get in your way. So uninstall that, and I don't think you really need that because of Windows Defender. Microsoft's really got Windows locked down pretty well. It is no longer the big vector. The big vector is other software maintained by other companies poorly, like your browser, third-party browsers like Flash from Adobe, like Java from Oracle. Those tend to be the big problems these days because they're not automatically updated as quickly and easily as Windows updates. But that's why you want those updates. I think McAfee is problem number one.
Okay, and then when I go to some websites that I want to review on the net, I continuously get messages of long-running scripts. Sometimes they don't open. Sometimes I can't even get email to open properly.
Yeah, get rid of McAfee.
Okay.
And make sure you do a complete and full uninstall. Then I would install this update. If it's still causing problems, I guess you want to remove it. But, boy, that makes me nervous. It's a cumulative patch, so it covers a lot of things that, you know, what Microsoft says is it includes improvements and fixes in the functionality of Windows 10. Well, that doesn't tell you much, but it does fix some significant security issues, and you don't want to be running on the internet without these patches. That's the problem. So, you know, it may be interacting poorly with some software you have. My first guess would be McAfee. So get rid of that and then see if that helps. It's also probably your problem with your CPU because these security software, generally security software is terrible, by the way.
Right. So you don't think it's the fact that I have too basic a computer with no capacity?
No, you got plenty of computer.
Great. Glad to hear it.
Yeah. It's software in there that's doing something weird. And and the Process Explorer will tell you what's using up all those cycles if you're curious.
I can tell you that the HP techs and the Microsoft techs have spent hour upon hour upon hour with me.
I love it that people call me. But you know what? As I've mentioned before, sometimes these techs aren't that good. Unless you're paying for the higher level of support, the support that comes with the system is as cheap as they can get. That's the profit going down the drain, and they don't want to spend any money on it. And mostly it's untrained people reading notebooks. So if it's not in the
note, they kept escalating me up the ladder to people who just really seemed to have an understanding, and they were baffled.
Yeah, because partly they don't want to go on record saying uninstall McAfee, right?
Well, that's because I think they included it as part of the package.
No, yeah, the company that sold you the computer did. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, they don't want to say that, but you know what? Leo will say it. Get rid of that piece of junk.
I would
it's
be
horrible,
happy to, Leo.
Horrible. And not necessary. It's not helping you in any way. It's only getting in your way.
So you don't think it's Windows 10 and you think it's the Mac?
No. Windows 10's fine. Okay. I run it on – I'm looking at three machines right now running it flawlessly with – you have more than enough power. People are running Windows 10 on eight-year-old computers well. Your computer is very modern and powerful.
Well, what really baffled me is somebody loaned me an Asus laptop, and I was doing the work side by side on that, and on the HP I was having the problem, and on the Asus I wasn't.
Yeah, and I bet one difference was McAfee.
I think you are correct.
Get rid of it. Those things you don't need them, and of course HP puts it on there because McAfee pays them to do it. McAfee's owned by Intel. You'd think Intel would know better. There is no need anymore with Windows 10 to buy third-party antivirus software, period. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you're in marketing, you know that the technological revolution that's going on in marketing is changing everything, how you market. But you may also have a little hard time keeping up with this, whether you're a professional marketer or you just have a business and you want to kind of keep up with the state of the art. Adobe's got these great white papers. I really like them, from the Adobe Marketing Cloud, they call it. And they've just recently released audio versions of these. And they actually bought an ad to tell you about this, so I'm doing it right now. It's the Adobe Audio White Papers for Marketing. And if you Google that, you'll find them on iTunes. You can jump to the iTunes page. And they're really interesting. There's a lot of great information in here. They're very nicely read. They're fairly short, around 20 minutes to half an hour, so you could listen in the car on the way to or from work. And keep up with the latest things like learning the differences between interaction metrics, engagement metrics, and value metrics to help figure out where and how your creative is working. Creating personalized content that's relevant to your customers using predictive analytics. I could learn a lot from this. Creating a 360-degree view of each customer, no matter where they're interacting with your brand, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is search on iTunes, Audio White Papers for Marketing, or Google Adobe Audio White Papers for Marketing. You'll find them that way, too. Audio White Papers for Marketing. Look for them on iTunes. They're absolutely free. There's no cost. And there's a lot of great stuff. Here's a review on the iTunes store. The show's very informative. I've been learning a lot from it. Great example of an audio white paper. Give a listen. This is a review of your business has a new secret weapon. I recommend that any organization that's written a white paper should create an audio version. This one for the Adobe Marketing Cloud is an excellent example of how it should be done. Well-structured, cites external authorities, uses a journalistic voice throughout. They hired a reader who does a lot of audiobooks for Audible. He's one of my favorites, actually. And never falls into a sales pitch for a specific Adobe product. No, because it's about you and about making your marketing more effective. Search iTunes for Adobe White Papers for Marketing. We thank Adobe for Marketing Cloud for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and why Pokemon Go servers just can't keep going. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, use Skype. You can call me from anywhere in the world. It's a toll-free number in the U.S., so it shouldn't cost you anything. 888-827-5536. The website, techguylabs.com. Let's go to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Ian is next. Hi, Ian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. So I'm going to Japan in September, and I was looking at getting something like Google Glass for first-person photos. I was wasn't sure if you knew of anything similar or
glass. Yeah, I wouldn't get glass. It's $1,500, which is a little pricey. A lot of people.
I saw one on Craigslist for $500.
Oh, yeah. I bet you. You know what? I bet you there's a brisk market of people trying to get their money. It used to be you couldn't transfer glass. It was tied to a Google account. I don't know if that's still the case. So I might be careful about that. When they first came out, it was tied to your account and you couldn't give it to somebody else. There was one and only one account it could use, but maybe that has changed. I'd have to ask around. I don't know anybody who still uses glass. I'm not sure that's the best way to do it. Cause you look kind of dopey for one thing. And it also puts people on their guard because they think you're taping them all the time. So do you want to take pictures all the time or just once in a while? I mean, what is it that you're thinking to do?
Well, I was thinking for like first person, you know, like it's great to have a camera phone, but, you know, that's always taken aback or you're at an angle or something. But right. So I could have like my experience in Japan.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool? There is a device that you wear around your neck. I'm not sure I'd 100% recommend it because, unfortunately, it's very unobtrusive. You could actually clip it on a collar, and it takes a picture every, I think, 30 seconds and stores it up on a server, or you can have it copied to your phone, or you could just, it has its own memory. And the idea is, it's what we call a life cam. The idea is it's going to record your life every 30 seconds, so you don't even have to think about taking the picture. It's the only issue I have, and I had one, the only issue I had with it is the angle is a little weird because it's on your chest. So the device is called the Narrative Clip. At least you could look on the website and see if it's what you want. It's getnarrative.com. I use the original. But they've come out with another version of it. It's a fairly wide-angle camera. You see, it's very small, if you go to the website, and unobtrusive. And so you can clip it on your pocket. You could clip it on a collar. It has an 8-megapixel camera, which is about the same as the Google Glass. I would say it's actually probably a little better than Google Glass. It can also do video. It has a GPS built into it, so all the pictures you take are tagged with your locale. And then you can either upload it with Wi-Fi or use Bluetooth and send it to the phone, which will upload it. So the theory behind this is it's constantly watching what you're doing, taking a picture from your point of view, kind of what you just described. And it's it comes from this kind of interesting philosophy or idea that a guy named Gordon Bell came up with of recording every moment of his life and just having it forever. So this would be one way to do it, and it's from getnarrative.com. I don't think they're
okay.
I think they're a little pricey. Well, not that bad. $200. That's a lot better than a Google Glass, okay?
Yeah.
And it's as good as Google Glass, and has the same issue, which is the Google Glass is aimed at wherever your right eyebrow is aimed. This will be aimed wherever your chest is aimed. But it does, unlike glass, you have to trigger it. Now, you could trigger it with a wink or a tap, but Narrative Clip just takes a picture every 30 seconds, just takes another picture. And what you get is kind of interesting. You get this kind of animated video of your life as you walk through it. I like the idea. I'm not sure. It wasn't for me, let's put it that way.
Hmm.
Now, there are other options. Of course, there's things like, they call them action cams, like the GoPro, which you can, it's not unobtrusive, but they're designed to be worn. You'll see people wearing GoPros on all sorts of equipment as they bicycle or do extreme sports or surf. They take really good pictures. They can be set to take pictures automatically, or you can use your phone to trigger it. I think that would give you the best picture quality. And often people use it for 4K video of them surfing or jumping off of mountains and things like that. Those are called action cameras. Let me think if there's another. Do you want it to take pictures automatically, or do you want to do it when?
Well, I was thinking like I could trigger it, like if we're planning on doing a few things, so like that way I could just. I saw a glass, you tap on it, or like a Pebble watch, I could press a button there.
Right. Yeah, if you had. Yeah, I mean, iPhone also does that with their Apple Watch. And Android Wear, actually. I think you could trigger a picture with the watch. So you could have a smartphone in your pocket with the camera sticking up and do that as well. You should be aware, I don't know, but somebody in the chat room is saying that there are consent required laws in Japan. It may be that the rules of taking pictures are different. In the U.S., if you take pictures in public, you don't have to require permission. It may be different in Japan, so I would inquire first about the local rules there.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there are live streaming cameras, a variety of those as well. In fact, that's going to be something I think is going to take off. We've already seen it in events in Turkey, other situations where people fire up Periscope on Twitter or Facebook's Facebook Live. YouTube's going to add this capability. Your YouTube app in the next month or so, maybe sooner, will have a record and upload live button that will let you stream live. I think that's interesting. There's one other thing I'm really kind of excited about. Samsung mentioned this when they announced the Galaxy S7. I'm sure they'll mention it again. They have a big event coming up August 2nd to announce the Note 7, their giant phone. They have a 360-degree camera. It's small. It's about the size of a GoPro, maybe, you know, a little bit bigger than a golf ball. And the idea of that is it can stream live to this. You have to have a Samsung Galaxy phone, an S7, or I'm sure the Note 7 will do this. Stream live to the phone, which will then stream to the internet. And it's not just a straight-ahead camera. It's a 360-degree camera. There's an advantage to that because you don't have to aim it. It gets everything all the way around you. I use a Ricoh Theta S camera, which I love, about $350, that does live video or stills or records video. In fact, if you go to my YouTube channel, I recorded some video on the last cruise we took earlier this year, youtube.com/LeoLaporte, of 360 degrees. And as you're watching the video on YouTube, you can scroll around. You can see what's behind me, what's in front of me, what's to my left, what's to my right. Those are kind of interesting. Samsung's just released a 360-degree camera to go with the Galaxy S7 that will do that and do it live as well. In fact, the video they showed at the Samsung event was some buddies who had gone to Paris. They had to leave one of their pals at home. He couldn't go. So they fired up the 360-degree camera as they're walking down the Champs-Élysées, and their buddies at home wearing the Galaxy Gear VR, which is their 360-degree virtual, you know, immersive video viewer. And he's with them, and he's talking to them on the phone. He's saying, what's over there? And they're looking. That's kind of an interesting idea, this telepresence idea. So there you go, a bunch of stuff. We'll put all the links to the various things I mentioned in the show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. Pretty much, there's nowhere you can go without being on video these days. That's good, and that could be bad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Website, techguylabs.com. No charge. No sign up. It's just like one of those crazy websites. You just go there and it's there and it's free. Like the old days, like the web used to be. Remember? The good old days. Jerry Hatfield, PA. Hello, Jerry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I have a question, but prior to that, I have a comment.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to the tech TV, ZDTV. Back in the late 80s.
I dimly remember those. Yeah, yeah.
And you guys, you and Kate made an appearance at a Gateway store in Southeast PA. That was a Naval Air Station.
I remember that. Was it at York or where were we? I can't remember.
Horsham. It was Horsham, PA.
Yeah, I remember that. It was fun.
And when my wife and I got up to the table, you stood up and shook her hand, and she never got over that house. You're such a gentleman.
Well, I don't know what came over me that day, but I'm glad she has a positive memory.
The red sponge with ZDTV on it, and we got
Signed
portrait of you and Kate. Yeah,
fun. That was fun. That's the old TV show we did. And it was me and Kate. That must have been 1998 that you saw us, something like that. Yeah.
No, I remember it was prior to me getting out of the military, and that was the late 80s. When I first started watching you guys.
Well, I'm so glad you did. And give my regards to your wife. I'm standing right now.
I can't, Leo, because her code's been disassembled.
Oh.
Is somewhere in the cloud.
Oh, I'm sorry. She's up in the cloud. Good.
Well, yep.
Tell her, when you see her, next time you get this assembled, say hi to her for me.
A question, Leo, and I think it's like a public service announcement if you could help us out.
Sure.
Telephones. I went to a voiceover IP,
yeah,
and I'm using Magic Jack. And I know it has very few features.
Yeah, but it's good. I mean, a lot of people use Magic Jack, and it's very affordable. What is it, like $20 a year or something? It's very affordable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My question is, I keep getting these telemarketer calls, and if there is something on the market available, like a box you can put between the phone, so they would answer and say, okay, push this button here, and then it would ring through.
So, Magic Jack's giving you a normal phone number.
Yeah.
And is it listed in the phone book? No.
No.
So what's happening is these telemarketers, gosh darn them, are just random calling numbers, obviously, unless Magic
That's
Jack,
right.
I hope that Magic Jack didn't sell your number to some lists. That's possible as well. So
that's true, but I could get, I mean, I get them on my cell phone. I can block them, but there's so many.
I know. It's a blight. Now, the feds have the do not call registry,
which does not work.
Yeah, and it works only if you have a landline. I don't even know if it'll work. It doesn't work on cells, and I don't know if it'll work on VoIP either. So that might be why it's not working for you. They are legally required if you say, do not call this number, please put me on your do not call list. They are legally required to do so. The problem is, there's 100 million of them. So you're going to have to ask every single one of them. At least you won't get them calling you back.
Leo, they call from offshore, so they're not responsible.
They're not bound. No. Nope.
Right. But is there a device?
Not that I know of.
There's no device. That'd be something for somebody to make.
Well, here's what you could do, and it actually works quite well for me, is set up an account with Google Voice.
Okay.
And the problem is you're going to have to start using that number. But that number has screening.
Okay.
And so, and there are lots of services like this. Google Voice is one, and it's free. And what you do is you give people that number. Let me see. How could you get now your magic? What you want it to do is on your Magic Jack number. But the way, if you have a Google Voice number, you can say, first of all, if it's from an unknown caller, don't just go right to voicemail. But you can also, and I use this, you could say every caller has to announce themselves. And so when you get a call, they're supposed to say, I'm calling, you know, this is Joe, your buddy. What do you mean announce myself? And then you go, hey, Joe, you press one to pick up. Telemarketers, mm-hmm. when they hear that, they hang up. They never, I've never yet had them say, yeah, I'm calling to sell you some life insurance. Never. Not once. Not once. They hang up. So it's a good way to get rid of them. The problem is it's a different number than the one you got right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what you could do is from now on give out the Google Voice number, have it forward to the Magic Jack number.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the problem is just, you know, I don't know what the solution is for this. I have an unlisted number. They're not supposed to do it to sell numbers, but the whole thing is just a mess. How many, just out of curiosity, how many calls do you get?
I might get two or three a day.
What the? What? That's terrible.
It'll ring three or four times. I see the number. I know it's a telemarketer. I pick it up, and there's nobody there.
Yeah. There's a delay, and then they go, hold for an important message. Did you know you're paying too much for auto insurance? Click.
Well, here's a good one. I'm calling from Microsoft, and you know your computer has errors in it. And I say, which computer? Click.
Yeah, that one's really bad. So there is, the chat room said, there is a service called Nomo Robo, NOMORobo. Mm-hmm. I have no experience with it. It sounds like a device, or I guess maybe you have your phones go through, your phone number go through. This might be worth, if anybody's used this, call us and let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Nomo Robo, it's... for a landline only, it's free, they say. It's mobile plus landline is $5 a month.
I have an ISP.
It says protect unlimited VoIP landlines. That's what you've got is a VoIP landline. So
mm-hmm. I'll check it out.
Would you? And let me know? Because I have no experience. I have no idea.
How would I let you know? Because I've been on hold for over an hour.
I know. Just email Leo at techguylabs.com.
Good enough, Leo.
Hey, thank you.
No, thank you, Leo.
Appreciate it. Maybe it'll work. It'd sure be nice. I wonder if there's a... Because there is... I mean, it's distinctive, right? The first is there's a long delay. But you don't want a piece of hardware on your system hanging up on people either. You know what? I will try this as well. We had an interview with a guy who did a service called the Jolly Roger service. It was so funny. He basically set it up that your call, like, how did it work? Your calls went through a number, or I can't remember how it worked, but it was, he had a recording that would drive telemarketers crazy. Jolly, you can find out more at jollyrogertelephone.com. What if I could play a little example? I played this when he came in for the interview. It was a really great idea. So this would be another possible choice. You can actually send telemarketers to the robot. I guess you forward a number. Okay, let's see. For mobile phones, for landlines, you press add. Oh, you conference. That's what it is. You conference a telemarketer in to this robot, and then you listen as the robot drives the telemarketer insane. I'll play a little clip of this for you when I come back. He basically, it's a guy going just like spacing out and wasting their time, and it's really not useful for blocking telemarketers, but it can be kind of a sweet revenge. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 ask Leo, we need, you know, there needs to be a good, I don't know if there's a technological solution to robocalls. And of course, with an election coming up, you know, you're going to be getting called all the time, especially if you're in a swing state like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida. Boy, that's got to be tough. We live in California, so we're not even in play. It's like they don't even bother. It's like, well, we know we're not getting your vote, so we're not going to bug you. Let's see. JB Placerville has called us with a question. Hi, JB.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a iPhone 6S plus S thing.
Yeah, the biggest, latest iPhone.
Yeah, I have 8,738 deals in my Gmail, which I don't pay much attention to.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to erase it. You have to do it one at a time?
No. Well, first of all, which program are you using for your mail? Are you using the built-in Apple Mail one, or are you using Google's Gmail?
My Gmail.
Yeah. So it's not even on your phone.
I don't know what you mean.
So the way Gmail works is they store it on their server, and the Gmail program will download a few and cache them, but it doesn't keep them on your phone. So you have lots of email, but they're not stored on your phone. They're stored at on gmail.com.
Oh, they're stored on my – well,
no, you can see them, yeah, but they're not there.
From June 14th to – I see they're not – they're just at –
When you tap it, it will download it from Gmail. If it's an older one, yeah. And then Gmail kind of cleans it up, so it doesn't. It keeps a few there, kind of in a cache, so they load faster.
Yeah.
But it cleans it up. So the old stuff. In fact, you can verify this yourself by just going to the old stuff and tapping it and seeing it doesn't load right away. It's just you'll see the subject line that keeps that, but the body of the mail will take a little second or two to come in. So that's one of the real advantages of using Gmail or any server-side web mail, because you don't store the mail locally. It's stored on Gmail. So don't worry about it. It's not taking up space on your iPhone. Now, let me tell you what you can do.
Okay, that's what I was concerned about.
Yeah, no, I understand, because space is at a premium. You can, on your iPhone, launch settings, and you can see what's used, you know, how much space is being used if you're interested in it.
And
you can even do it program by program. So if you let me see how we do this here. Every time I use an iPhone, I get confused about where stuff is put. But
yeah.
There is a place where they put the information about your storage, and it is, I wanted to say general, but I don't see it in general. Battery privacy. Give me a hand here, chat room. Where should I look? Maybe it is in general. About software update. Access. There it is. It is. I'm sorry. Under general storage and iCloud usage. So you don't care about iCloud right now. That's the cloud storage. But under storage, you'll see how much is used, how much is available, and then there's a button that says manage storage. Now, click that and wait, because it's going to load every application. You'll see Gmail on there, by the way, and you can see how much space it's using. It sorts those.
When I look at it, it says use 26.7 gigabytes and available 28. So
you're golden, dude. You have a 64 gig iPhone, and you haven't even used half of it.
Okay.
But if you do start to run out, you can see what's using it. So, for instance, on mine, I see that music is taking up quite a, you know, gigabytes of space, because I've downloaded some music so I can hear it when I'm on an airplane or somewhere I don't have internet access. I see cameras and photos, that's taking up a lot of space. My audio books, that's taking up a gigabyte or two. And so you can see exactly what it is. And if you decide, hey, you know, I don't want all of that space taken up, you can actually go to click the app and delete it, and it'll delete the app and all the space that it's using. So another way to say
that.
Well, just tap it. So you're in general, the general settings, general, and you're under the storage and iCloud usage, and you tap manage storage, and then you'll see a list of all your apps and how much data they're using. Tap, let's say, you know what? I see that I have a birding program that's using up a lot of space. I can see how much data it's using, how big the app is, and then if I tap the app, I can delete it if I want. You generally cannot recover data without deleting the whole app. But, you know, here's a little tip. If you want, you could delete the app. That'll delete the data and the app, recover all that space, and if you need the app, reinstall it.
Oh.
Yeah. A little clever. Pokemon Go, good news. Only using 31 megabytes of data on my phone.
In the iCloud total storage, it says 200 gigabytes and available is 126.
Yeah, now that's iCloud. That's you're paying. That's why you have 200. You're paying a couple of bucks a month for extra storage. That's your backup, your stuff that you're putting on the cloud, like your photos, stuff like that. That's why they let you see both of those in that one page. That's useful. So, you got plenty of room, in other words. Don't worry about your Gmail. It's fine.
Okay. Don't worry about running out of space.
Not yet.
Not for quite a while.
You haven't even used half of it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I really enjoy your program. You're such a neat guy. I used to listen to you in the Bay Area.
Yeah. Yeah. I started I won't mention the call signs. I don't want anybody upset because I'm on a different station now in the Bay Area. And then I took some time off to do TV. And then they called me. The wonderful Robin Bertolucci down at KFI in Los Angeles said, "What are you doing these days?" I said, "Nothing." "Would you like to do a radio show?" I said, "Yes, I would." This was in 2004. And she helped me get it syndicated. We're on a couple hundred stations now, including the wonderful KKSF in San Francisco. Hey, thanks for listening.
Great.
I appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye, JB. We're running out of time, so I will get to Ed in just a second. And the Gizwiz coming up. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He always has a crazy gadget or two. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. And I imagine we'll have a little Pokemon Go help on that website for you. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's the roller coaster of gadgets, ladies and gentlemen. Dick, I think probably you hear this song and it brings you back. Ohio Players, 1978, your disco houseboat.
Yes.
A party is going on right here. A celebration. Throughout the year. Hello,
well, you know, it's very funny, Leo, because we're going to go back with you and talk about, it's very funny, over at World News Now a couple of weeks ago, one of the producers said, you know, you love LEDs. Do something about, like, LEDs or the history of LEDs. Do something for World News Now.
Oh, nice. That's a good subject.
I started looking, and guess who introduced me to the world's first consumer version of an LED bulb that was the 60-watt replacement? Does the name ring a bell?
Bob Crane of C. Crane Company.
Yes, but you were the one who brought it to the Daily Gizwiz.
Oh, because Bob introduced it to me.
Yes.
I went to dinner with Bob, and he says, I got to show you, Leo, I got to show you this. And at the time, it was like $100. I mean,
Leo, it was $110.
Yeah. but you know, he said, this is gonna change the world. And boy, was he right.
Absolutely. So then the next big jump was the switch light bulb. I don't know if you remember switch LED. It was just 4 years ago. It was the first dimmable. It also was one that had a warm light, whereas, you know, most of them were using daylight.
Originally they were very bright and white. Yeah.
And it knocked the price down to just $60.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow, what a savings.
What a saving. And then I thought, let me go on Amazon and see what Cree is doing these days. So Cree is doing a couple things. The Cree, they have their latest is about a year old now.
They've become, haven't they, the LED light kings.
To go to, exactly. Yeah. So they now have a soft white, and it's called the 4-Flow. It's still a 60-watt replacement. Now, Leo, the switch light bulb weighed 10 ounces. The Cree 60-watt bulb that is out now weighs 1.5 ounces. It can be put inside closed fixtures. People didn't realize that some of the early LEDs with the heat sinks and things, they didn't want them in enclosed glass fixtures. They were great for lamps. Cree also came out with the connected a 60-watt bulb replacement, but it's not Wi-Fi enabled, so it has to work through a hub like, I forgot the hub, a Z-Big smart thing.
Okay, so the home automation stuff. Yeah.
But yeah. Leah, down to $8, and then I'm looking and it goes, wait a minute, I could buy a dozen for just $5 each. And then I'm thinking, wait, I have three lamps in my house. These will last so long, I will not be alive to be able to use a dozen LED light bulbs.
Isn't this the funny thing? Because I put in LED light bulbs in our bathroom, and I told my wife, you know, these are going to outlast me.
Yes!
In theory, right, they go 20 years, something like that, right?
20 years. And if you rate the life at just 3 hours a day, it's like 30 years.
Yeah, the amount we use them, I'll be gone.
Yeah.
I'll be gone. Yeah. And if not, I'll be 98 years old going, I think I can change this light bulb. By then, it'll be like, well, let me put the new holographic light bulb in.
I was just going to say, yes. I was going to say, honey, do they have like a 1,000-watt bulb equivalent so I could see in here?
Yeah, that too.
And the only thing that hasn't changed is that you still, old dimmers won't work on LEDs because they're so wildly efficient. That some old dimmers
turn them way down and nothing happens.
It cannot turn off an LED bulb. So Lutron makes one of those dimmers that you can plug a lamp into it and then control it. And I looked on Amazon; they're $13.
This is what blows me away: is how the price has dropped. And you know, Bob Crane told me that would happen. He said, "Look, it's $99 now, but you know, you're getting a mass production; these are not going to cost much at all."
No,
they're cheap. They're as cheap as incandescent. Well, they're not quite as cheap as an incandescent.
Not quite as cheap, but still, you can get them as cheap as $5.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Yeah,
exactly.
So Cree and they call them the Switch.
No, the Switch was the $60
technology. What's it called now?
The Cree 4 Flow.
The Cree 4
Flow. And it's on gizwiz.biz under your tab and also on Amazon, the 4Flow.
And have you tried them? Is the white really like soft like they say?
It's a very soft white. And what's so funny is the bulb feels so light and chintzy. I actually dropped it on the floor. It turns out they're not glass, so it's even better.
Good. Oh, good. You can't break. They bounce.
Yeah, they pretty much do bounce. And they look now pretty much exactly like a bulb. None of that fancy heat sink and stuff.
It's gotten much easier. Yeah. Just isn't amazing. Technology. Go to gizwiz.biz. Click the the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy banner. I should know better.
Yeah.
And then you'll find links to the story about the Cree connected LED bulb and the Cree soft white LED and... What the Heck Is It contest, a chance for you to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. It's Dick's website, Gizwiz, GIZWIZ.biz, BIZ. And don't forget the Gizwiz podcast now in its 64th episode.
64?
Is that right?
No, 1,564.
Oh, okay, sorry. 64th independent episode.
Yes. Oh, yes, there you go.
At gizwiz.tv. He does a great...
You should try going independent yourself. I think you'll
One of these days, I'm going to get out from under that Leo Laporte's thumb and really... then my career will begin.
Yeah, then you can do whatever you want.
Gizwiz.biz, Dickie D. We'll talk again next week.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Take care, my friend. We're going to end the show as I began it, talking about Pokemon. Ed's on the line from Crossville, Tennessee. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Leo. I hope you're having a good day.
I sure am. How about you?
Oh, I'm having a wonderful day.
Good.
I can sum this up in about a minute.
That's about how long you got.
I got, there's millions of blind and handicapped people in the world, and Pokemon is not available to most of them.
No, it's no accessibility, huh?
Nope.
How would you make it accessible? I mean, the way it works is you're walking around, the phone vibrates, that would be enough to let you know, but then you have to, the game is to fire, to aim a Pokeball at the Pokemon.
Okay, easy. Audio pitch.
Oh, there you go. Brilliant.
The footsteps that you have for closeness, pitch goes up,
closer you get.
Brilliant.
If you want the direction, go with a tone. Okay, so you can turn and listen for a higher pitch, a lower pitch, or a higher tone or a lower tone. And then you can just flip your phone at it. And there's a lot of money to be had from people who are out there who don't have anything else to do because they're blind or handicapped and children.
What a good idea. Well, and they must feel a little left out, right? I mean, everybody's talking about this game and you can't play it.
That's exactly it. And by the way, there's a bee crawling up my arm. Hold on a minute.
That's from the Jolly Roger robocall guy. Hey, it's, you know what? We all need to be sensitized. There's no reason why this kind of technology can't be accessible to all. I completely agree with you, Ed, and I hope somebody at Niantic is listening. And we'll do that for you. I think that's a great idea.
I cannot put in a support claim because it's not voiceover compatible.
Of course
not.
Of course not. But I'll mention it to him. Hey, I thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. Thank you all for being here. To Nathan Staten, our musical director, Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, and to you for being here, I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.